Anna Sheridan, missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. How did I talk to the spirit?
Someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil. There's no place for ghost stories in this investigation or any other.
I need you to find me.
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
Listen!
Hello and welcome to NVC, IGN's Nintendo podcast. I'm your host, Casey DeFreitas, and this week we will be talking a lot about Smash, some things not coming to fruition, like the Nintendo theme park, and a lot of other things. And I am joined today by a special guest, OJ, also known as Player Essence. He is a Nintendo brand ambassador and content creator and huge Smash fan, and we are so excited to have you on.
I am ridiculously excited to be here, and I've talked about this before, but IGN, I go back with IGN to Nintendo64.com. You know what I'm saying? God. Matt Castlemassina, those guys, you know, Bozon. Like, yes, this has been something since I was a teenager. You guys, honestly, and I'm just saying this for, like, for real, you guys made me love covering video games. Like, IGN back in the day and Game Informer, you guys were my inspiration to wanting to even do this before I even knew that I could do it, because we didn't have that stuff back then in terms of for everybody else. So it is an honor and a pleasure to be here, honestly. Thank you so
much. It's awesome to have you here.
Of course. You know,
dude, you're one of my favorite YouTubers out there, for sure. One of my favorite content creators, period. Because you legit know your Nintendo stuff, and I don't think you pull punches is another thing I really like about you, because I think there's a lot of people that are just like, they're like, I love everything, everything's great, and I'm like, well, let's talk. For real, like, it's the exact same thing for me. Like, I just, you know, reading IGN since way back in the day is why I'm doing this today. So that means the world to have you here.
Yeah, I loved you guys' content. Always watched the podcast. This is literally like a bucket list thing for me. So thank you guys so much for having me on. Honestly, like, my 13-year-old self, when I was freaked out, would be like, oh my gosh, this is my future. This is great. So I've always been a big fan.
That's so cool. You know? It's always cool to hear, like, old school IGN fan, like, an opportunity to come hang out with us and stuff. That's really awesome, man.
Well, it absolutely is. And to continue, I'm also joined today by Brian and Zach, if you didn't recognize their voices. So
hey, listen.
Yeah, there we go. So I wanted to start off this week's conversation, the week of July 2nd, with some mid-minute impressions and kind of like a patch 8 top level summary for Smash players. And I'm very excited to have OJ here because he's an expert and he's great at Smash.
So I'm okay. I get bodied by the top players, but I'm okay. I used to play a lot locally in tournaments and stuff, you know, here in my region. But yeah, you want a little summary? So here's what basically went down. This is biggest patch ever for changes and buffs for characters. It is the biggest ballast patch that we have seen so far. Obviously Min is in there. She's a very unique character, but in terms of for characters, like the buffs, so many characters: Mario, Jigglypuff, Ice Climber, Sheik, Dr. Mario, Kirby, Falcon, Captain Falcon, and Falco, Marth, Mewtwo, Meta Knight, Dark Pit, and Pit, Zero Suit Samus, DDD, Olimar, Villager.
Wow.
Yeah, it keeps going.
That's all buffs.
Wii Fit Trainer.
That's all buffs.
Yeah, all buffs. Rosalina, Corrin, Bayonetta, Ridley, King K. Rool, Isabelle, Incineroar, Piranha Plant, Sonic, Hero, Terry, Banjo, Ike, and Diddy Kong all got buffs ranging from to major. So,
wow, huge patch. They keep disrespecting my boy Young Link. No buffs.
Young Link is already really good.
No, I know. He's already really good.
I was trying to find some YouTube videos that had, like, some good summaries out there, and they were all like 30 minutes long. And I was like, are there really 30 minutes worth of things to discuss from this patch? And I went and, like, looked at it, and I'm like,
A lot of adjustments.
Not many characters.
A lot of adjustments. In terms of nerfs, there wasn't really many nerfs. A couple slight Diddy Kong got up in that. There was like an infinite that you can do with Diddy Kong. You can no longer cheese people with the infinite, so that got adjusted.
That's good.
A couple other things with some of the other characters: Pac-Man, Duck Hunt, Little Mac, Ivysaur, Mega Man. Nothing worth noting, to be honest, for most people. So overall, huge patch. A lot of adjustments. Can definitely shake up the game for people once tournaments come back on, or when you do online tournaments, or just playing in general.
Mm-hmm. I imagine there's going to be just a lot of pros really digging into this for a while, fine tuning their play styles now, because that doesn't sound like a couple of things here and there. That sounds like everybody, like the whole boat got rocked a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's definitely some changes. I think the biggest thing, because a lot of these characters aren't like, they don't win tournaments, right? A lot of these characters don't win tournaments. And the only thing that I can see from this that really kind of shakes things up quite a bit would potentially be Ike with some of the stuff that he can do, because his up B is now kind of somewhat busted and can kill very early, and you can combo into it. And also Marth. Marth was a character that, you know, you have to hit at the tipper range, right, to get that extra damage, and it just never felt right. It never felt like melee Marth, didn't even feel like brawl Marth at times. So it always just felt off. And they adjusted the ranges of that tipper. So that can also be something that kind of gets maybe a little bit more play. But we have to wait and see. We have to, these pros aren't playing locally. So
no, yeah. And I also I watched a video with Zero. It spoke about a match that he did with MKLeo, who is really, who knows a lot about Marth and Lucina. And he said after playing Marth with Patch, he actually couldn't tell much of a difference, if at all. But again, I don't think they were playing locally. And I think that they could discover some things after playing more, but just first impressions, he didn't feel a lot of change with that character. But it's... I did hear Corrin and Mewtwo, for example, might be, as well as Ike, as you mentioned, worth checking out.
Yes, Mewtwo, Corrin for sure, absolutely Corrin, because they changed his little dagger thing that he has, his side B, they changed that, and they also... Yeah, they also buffed his up air, which was already really strong, and now it even it's even better than it was before. So yeah, those are things that once the tournament play starts back in, but Corrin wasn't as good as he was in Smash 4 to begin with, so they kind of got him back up. Ike is a character that was kind of strong at first with MKLeo, but then kind of dropped off once MKLeo stopped using him, so maybe MKLeo goes back to using him, but you're right about what he said about Marth. That's why I said I wasn't 100% sure. They did adjust some things and it might be a bit better, but it's like you could just use Lucina. That's just the biggest thing. Just use Lucina instead, you know?
It's weird because you read these patch notes and it looks like there's so much change, but Nintendo doesn't specifically say how much they have actually changed those things. So you never really know until you do it.
They'll just say like adjust the damage up, like higher damage. You know, you have to actually say, well, how much damage was it from before to now? But by the way, they used to never give us any patch notes. For anything. You didn't even know what got adjusted. So people were sitting there spending all night trying to see what happened. So it's interesting.
So OJ, it's obviously like too early to tell, but do you think that once things get started again, this gives an opportunity for some characters that you never see at the top of tournaments to maybe get a chance to get there? Or do you think it's still going to be the usual suspects?
I think it's mainly going to be the usual suspects because of how top dominant Smash Brothers is. Very rarely do you see people win a major. We're talking about major here, not locals. So major, it's going to be one of like four or five people, right? And they have their characters that they use and they're really good. And Joker is still Joker at the end of the day. MKLeo is still MKLeo, and Joker is still Joker. And Arsene is just ridiculously good. You know, Pokemon Trainer is ridiculously good. So if Tweak is playing with Pokemon Trainer, Wario is still really good. So you're going to see the characters that usually bop people. They're going to keep on bopping people. I mean, there might be a little bit of an adjustment. I know Cosmos, he's a great player. He used Smash 4. He used Corrin. He uses Inkling now, but he might be able to do something. So we might see Corrin kind of get back into it, but with Cosmos, really, particularly just him. But there's a number of good Joker players, but MKLeo is obviously the top guy. But it's really going to be more of the character.
How about the Piranha Plant? Do you think the Piranha Plant has a chance to start?
Not at all.
No, unfortunately, Piranha Plant, no. But you never know. You know what?
You never
Tweak
know.
Is pretty good with Piranha Plant, you know? So maybe Tweak. He gets bored at times. So maybe he gets super bored, which this is by what he said. He gets super bored. So maybe he picks up Piranha Plant and maybe he does something with it.
He might come out of quarantine just like a pro Piranha Plant player. That could be great.
I would not put it past him. This guy has won majors with multiple Pokemon trainer, with Wario, with lots of different, with Wolf. He can use pretty much any. He's very talented. So, I mean, it's very possible that he might be able to just pick up. Actually, he did pick up Piranha Plant like day one. Was like, when I'm like, how are you? First day and he's just destroying everybody. I'm like, you're too good, man.
I saw a lot of people doing that with Min Min, which was surprising to me as well. But we start,
I mean, I think that happens with every new character, right? Mm-hmm. Like when Byleth came out and I was still playing a lot of Smash, like everybody was playing as Byleth. Like every match online was Byleth. Like people were just coming out of the woodworks just to kind of get a feel for those new characters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Byleth seemed incredibly strong, but those are
super
basically
strong.
Yeah. Our patch 8 summary. So let's talk about our impressions of Min Min. OJ, I'm going to default to you because I know that you've checked her out, and I also want to know Zach and Brian, like, what do you guys think of Min Min?
Min Min is the weirdest DLC character so far. Absolutely weird. And I used her and I got her to my little Elite Smash that I need to get her so I can really get a feel for her. Labbed her out. But she has so many unique properties. And she's heavier than you would think. I think she's over 100. I think she's like 104 when it comes to her weight. So she survives longer than you would expect. And she has very weird properties with her arms because you control one arm with the A button and the other arm with the B button. And then you can swap out different arms like the Megawatt and the Dragon and the Ram Ram. You can swap them out and they all have different properties. So easily one of the most unique characters ever added to Smash and the controls for her. She doesn't have normal like a normal back air or a nair, forward air and all that. It's like, it's just based on the Ram Rams and you press different buttons. I've never used a character like her, which is good. I like that they're adding different things and new things. How much do I like her in general? I'm not so sure. This is just so weird. But you want to keep playing as her because you're like, they've never done this before. Like, these controls right. are just absolutely crazy and what she can do. And her offstage game, like gimping people from getting back, if you really want to, you know, be mean. You know, I don't do that to my friends normally when I play. But if I'm playing against people that I know that are really good, you definitely want to gimp people off stage. She can do crazy stuff off stage, and her recovery is really good, too. So overall, like, she's very interesting. I don't know how much I like her yet compared to the other. I mean, I kind of have an idea, but man, I was just blown away by how they actually implemented her. And I think it kind of feels like playing arms, but it doesn't. I don't know. It's Smash, but you're using those different arms to fight. So I do love her design. Her design is absolutely amazing. How they implement it into Smash is crazy. Only Sakurai can do that. I don't know any other fighting game developer that.
Yeah, I think it's. Go for it, Zach.
Thanks, Brian.
Whenever you want to talk, Zach, you can go right now.
I was going to ask about the different control schemes, right? Because like I feel like Smash does a really great job of sort of recreating how characters control in other fighting games. You know, you can do that quarter circle forward with Ryu and Ken in Smash, and it'll still throw that Hadouken. It sounds like Min Min has a similar sort of approach where her control scheme is closer to arms. Like, as a seasoned Smash dude, do you feel like you want more characters that have like unique control schemes, or do you prefer like a more traditional fighter approach?
I want them to do what they're doing. Like, it's really cool. Like, if you've played Street Fighter and then you hop into Smash Brothers, you put in those quarter circle inputs, it's actually stronger. So they give you benefits for your skill. Same thing with Terry. Like, if you want to put in like the native inputs, or if you want to do something else. So I absolutely love that. Like, even how they implemented like Arsene with Joker was pretty cool. Totally. Kind of like, you know, with the Rebellion's Guard and all of that. So they do a fantastic job, because usually we're just used to like, you know, like Marvel versus Capcom or something. It's like, they don't really, I mean, you have like Phoenix Rider, you have people that come from all these different stuff, and you're like, that's nothing like their series, but hey, it's cool, right? They're all stuff, right? But Smash just somehow finds a way to implement it in a certain way that just feels like the native game, but is Smash, like Smashified. So that, if they can continue doing that, that's great.
I think that's so interesting too, because actually, Zach, I was like gonna ask the same thing as you, so I'm glad you said it better than I could have. But that what's interesting about Smash is I think that it's a bad Super Mario game. Like, that doesn't feel like Super Mario when you jump in Smash at Super Mario.
That's then, at Agent Bizzle on Twitter if you want to get out.
Hit me up. get in line. But the thing is, like, I think that like when it comes to fighting game characters, they fit so much better in that world than even traditional Nintendo platforming characters don't really feel the same as they do there. So that's like really interesting to think about what other fighting game characters they could bring in and still retain that style while still making a Super Mario that doesn't feel like Super Mario when it jumps. Mm-hmm. It's just weird.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll get there.
Yeah.
One of these days.
Overall,
I'm looking for a patch.
So overall impressions for Min Min is positive from what I'm hearing. I mean, I really like the way that, as you guys have all already said, and much better than I could, they do a great job at making unique characters still work within the Smash universe. And I'm so glad that they did that with Min Min. I really liked her intro movie. And now that we've kind of got a taste of Min Min, I want to compare her to the other DLC characters so we can choose some of our favorites and rank them from best to worst. And I'm not going to put out specific, I don't know, review qualifiers. This is going to be arbitrary. So because maybe you liked the intro trailer the most, or maybe you liked the music that came with it the most, or the stage was the best, or maybe you just like how they implemented the character and smartly used their mechanics from the previous game, like Min Min or Joker or maybe you just think it's the best character to play in competitive. So any of those factors can go into your evaluation of these characters. Who wants to go first with their least favorite?
My least favorite is Piranha Plant. Yeah, Piranha Plant is bad. I don't like the moves. I don't know. I think it's really easy to spam with Piranha Plant. I think
it is.
Obviously, I'm not like a pro level Smash player or anything, but like I've come up against people that are just like, you know, not even mid-level Smash players that are just like, oh, I can just do this one, you know, spiked ball spit shot basically over and over and over again until I bring you out. And like that sucks a lot. But so yeah, I think Piranha Plant is my least favorite. Also, I don't like that he has feet. I think it's weird that he has little feet. I'm not a fan of that. But yeah.
How do you think the piranha plant got into the piranha plant? You know, like into the pipe. Like that's disgusting. You're gonna make somebody throw up thinking about that.
I don't know, man. I think piranha plant has the cutest feet out of all of the Smash characters.
There's probably a terrible website dedicated to that.
Yeah, you just started something.
I'm glad. Yeah. Go look at those plant feet.
Peach's also feet are pretty cute.
Where is this going? What are we doing?
It's going to this. I'll tell you where it's going. I also agree with Zach. Dude, Piranha Plant sucks. Like I do not like that character. First of all, it's cool. I guess it's like whatever that he's. Sakurai always puts in a troll character, and that is this game's troll. Like, you know, we've had it before. Duck Hunt Dog.
Yep.
Game and Watch. What the, like, Rob? These are all
Game and Watch
troll characters. That there's no why is this character in here? But they've got to have at least one. Every single Smash game, there's at least one. So, since the 64, there's been one. So, yeah, the Piranha Plant. That's the troll character, and I don't like it, but I'm glad that it's in there. How about that?
Okay,
that's fair. I do like it when people get really, really good with a troll character, though. Like, actually know what they're doing. Like, Josh Dew on our social team is, like, amazing with Game & Watch, and it makes me so mad every time I have to fight against him because he's like, okay, here he comes with Game & Watch, and he can actually play it, and like, yeah, it sucks.
Game & Watch is the best Game & Watch has ever been is in Ultimate. Game & Watch is really good in Ultimate. Really good. So, makes sense.
Well, all right, guys. So, we were talking about this before the show, but I play as Piranha Plant in groups, and when Piranha Plant first came out, I wrecked in our friendly matches with Piranha Plant and made them extremely angry, and that's why I find it so fun to play with, because I can just jump off the ledge and shoot up the spiky ball and like, whoops, you hit it and now you're dead. And I don't know, you're right, it's trolly and it's very silly, and I think that's why I like it. But it also didn't come with all of the content that the other characters have, so I guess I will give it to you guys that Piranha Plant is the worst DLC character.
Yeah, that's fair. Like there wasn't like a Piranha Plant stage, right?
No, not really. Yeah. There wasn't a stage, there was an extra music. It was just like, here's an extra Mario character. It's a plant in a pot. Have fun.
With feet.
With feet. The best part.
For me it was Byleth, because I don't care.
What?
Yeah.
That's Agent Bizzle on Twitter.
It's got a little tight here. Yeah. No, okay. Get just sweating a little bit more.
It's a character I don't care about from a franchise I don't care about, and terrible feet. So, you know, like, honestly.
Man, my image of you is crumbling by the second. Just stop, please, to save our friendship.
I've been talking to a lot of the pro players. They all agree. They said Fire Emblem is easily one of the worst Nintendo franchises, and Byleth is one of the worst.
That's not true. A bold-faced lie, bro.
you're gonna have Zero and Nairo and all these guys coming for you. And they like that.
I'm the troll DLC character for this episode.
No, it's okay not to like Byleth. Byleth's kind of slow, so I can feel you.
See, now all the hate's coming out. Everybody's getting on my level.
No, that's not all I'm going to say. That's as far as I'll go. Okay, I'll say that Byleth is slow. That's about as far as I'll go, and I'll stop.
I thought Byleth seemed extremely strong.
Oh, he's strong. He's strong.
Yeah, very strong. Very strong. But I can agree that the reveal for Byleth was kind of a little bit lackluster, I think.
It was terrible.
It's become
like Sothis like sending a note, right? Wasn't that the whole deal?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, if you look at the, were you gonna say?
No, go ahead, Brian. I'm sorry.
I was gonna say if you rank the reaction specifically of the people sitting in the Nintendo World Store in New York City, to me that is the thermometer by which to check the temperature on the excitement for any new DLC character. when you saw that room erupt for Banjo-Kazooie versus the like eight dudes just being like, all right, for Byleth, you know, I think that that speaks volumes. I think that, yeah. And I also think that that room agrees with me about the Fire Emblem franchise in general. So I think it's a good.
Well, Byleth also had a lot like going against them because it was the, I think, seventh Fire Emblem character to be added to the game. Like, I think if they had introduced that character after two Fire Emblem characters, it might have been a different story. But that late in the game with that many fire, that much like Fire Emblem representation was like, even as a Fire Emblem fan, you know, like a recent convert, but like nonetheless, I was like, okay.
There is a lot of negativity towards Fire Emblem in Smash because not necessarily because of the franchise, but just because how many characters there are in there and the status of Fire Emblem compared to other franchises that Nintendo has.
Yeah, it's so become a meme at this point. So adding another like Fire Emblem character.
Yeah, and I do feel like those characters like naturally lend themselves to a fighting game just because of their character design. And like I think it's kind of a holdover from previous Smash games. But yeah, totally. Like you don't need eight or whatever. There's so many.
Especially another blue haired person with a sword. I know Byleth has other
green.
Green.
It says hair is green.
It's
and there's a male and there's a female version. It's green. It's green, isn't it? I thought it was
after they awaken, spoiler. So but
I have like honestly I have no problem with the Fire Emblem franchise. I'm just pushing buttons here. But my issue with this reveal was that every one of these characters that gets added is another character from another franchise entirely that isn't there. And eventually we're going to hit a ceiling and this game's going to be done. I mean, we thought it was done ages ago, but Sakurai keeps being like, I still have life. Let's keep going. And so when I see a character like this, it's not like, oh man, I'm so sick of Fire Emblem. It's like, oh, this could have been X, Y, and Z from all these other classic games that haven't had representation yet in Smash Brothers. And so that's all it is for me personally.
I get it.
And that, and I think, you know, the Fire Emblem franchise is just terrible. It's just one of the worst. I'm lying. It's a joke.
I think,
don't get mad.
So on the total opposite end of the spectrum, do you think people were more hype about Joker or Banjo and Kazooie?
That's a tough one.
It's tough to say because the Joker reveal happened during the Game Awards. And so it's really hard for me to, because like I was in that, Zach and I were sitting next to each other in that room next to Andrew Goldfarb, who's one of the biggest Persona fans I've ever met in my entire life. And it was like, I'm biased. It's impossible to disconnect that moment in my brain from that reveal versus the other ones. So, the Banjo-Kazooie thing was huge.
Yeah, I mean, you were all in the war room at E3 for the Banjo-Kazooie one.
Yeah.
So.
I think that there's two schools of thought on both of those character reveals, right? Like Joker, people were stoked for because they didn't expect it. And it's like an awesome addition. Like nobody expected a Persona character to show up and smash him. When they did, they were like, oh, this is so tight. I didn't know that I wanted this. But Banjo and Kazooie are characters that people have been asking for in Smash for forever. And we totally thought it was off the table because Rare doesn't play nice with Nintendo anymore. And so it was, well, until this reveal, right? Like it was totally, I won't even say it as a surprise as much as it was like an anticipation thing of like, oh, is this going to be the reveal where they bring out Banjo-Kazooie? And I watched that reveal by myself. I wasn't in the war room and it bummed me out, but I was excited to see those characters come.
Yeah, for me personally, the Joker reveal was crazy because it's Persona. There had been no Persona on the Switch, not even like the Scramble or anything else. They had Persona Q, the 3DS, but there'd been no Persona. And to see Joker in there, you know, from Persona 5, that was just nuts. So to me, that was the craziest type of thing that I've seen. Banjo was like, people have been asking for Banjo since Smash 4. So it's been, people have been asking. Mm-hmm. So when it happened, I was like, well, it finally happened.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was hype, though. It was cool because we got two characters that day. So it was cool.
Yeah, that is true. I think what I liked about that one is kind of like, you know, what we're alluding to is that, like, that felt like if Smash Brothers is ultimately, no pun intended, like a gigantic celebration of video games, that felt like that was like Microsoft and Nintendo joining, even just like the tiniest bit. And I think that's where, to me, I was like, this game is so big. It is transcending like this juvenile console war thing that's been going on for centuries at this point. And it made us go like, oh wait, so does this open the doors for PlayStation to maybe get something in there someday? And obviously that hasn't happened yet. You know, you have like association with stuff like a Snake back in the day, but even that felt like a GameCube, you know, Twin Snakes holdover.
Twin Snakes thing, yeah.
Yeah. And so for me, that was just like, oh, this opens so many more doors. That actually hasn't really happened yet, but we'll see. There's still a bunch of question marks, right?
There's a lot more possibilities now, though. That's the thing. Like that, and that's what makes Smash exciting for people. What are they going to add? You know,
Five more characters?
Five more characters.
I'm so stoked. I can't wait. We'll hear more. We've been talking about Smash for a long time, you guys. So let's quickly finish this. So I think, could we agree that Joker is the best DLC character?
He's the best. A lot of people say he's the best character.
The best character, period.
Yeah, and he's could be the best. The reveal of him. So yeah, I'm gonna say Joker. Joker would be number one. Yeah.
And also, just like that dope Persona 5 soundtrack coming in.
I always put on Last Surprise every single time. Yeah. It's like, we got to do this one first.
And the stage is great too. And also like the characters and his victory screen, fantastic. Mm-hmm. Just oh my god, it's so good. Everything about it is fantastic with you know Joker in there.
So we have Piranha Plant on the bottom, Byleth second to last, and now we have to rank Hero, Banjo, and Terry. So real quick,
I've always found Hero to be like completely confusing. Like I haven't played a lot with Hero, but like that is a character that is very hard for me to understand and feel like I know what I'm doing. So I would say I would put Hero maybe above Byleth, but below the other two. I've barely played with Terry, like maybe two matches with Terry.
Yeah, same. I didn't really mess with Terry all that much.
I got him to Elite Smash and then I stopped playing him.
Yeah. All right. So maybe we should put Terry down below.
I mean, to me, it's like a toss up between those. I mean, those guys. I mean, they're all cool. I like Byleth. I'd probably say Joker, Byleth, Hero, Terry, Banjo, Piranha Plant. I might be missing someone. Then Min Min was somewhere in there with Byleth and Hero, somewhere up there too. Min Min's cool.
That is our official MVC ranking as determined by OJ. We're just going to go with it. Published. Done. But yeah, let us know what your favorite DLC characters are down in the comments below. I'd love to hear what you're saying and we'll get involved in the conversation down there. So I do want to move on to some other smaller news, but thank you guys so much for talking with me about Smash. I appreciate it. So let's talk about how Nintendo has finally apologized for Joy-Con drift. I know that we have talked about this topic to death on NVC. So let's very quickly, OJ, have you experienced any Joy-Con drift?
I have 5 Switches, so there's a lot of opportunity for Joy-Con drift. And I had on my launch model one. I had Joy-Con drift on there, on the left one. I sent it into Nintendo. It took like a day. They sent it back, and it's worked ever since.
A day?
Wow.
Damn.
Yeah.
Do you live next door to them or what?
Well, I live in Central Valley, California. So right. I think it's not
You live
very
in Central Valley?
Yeah.
Whereabouts? I'm from Stockton.
Fresno, Bakersfield, that area.
Okay, cool.
So yeah, I mean, I went to school at Fresno State, so so it was very quick. It was very, very quick. Got it, send it back, and that was that. But so many people have had issues. I've had people talk about there's been like 8 Joy-Cons that they've got that have had issues with it.
Yeah,
I haven't had as many issues, and I have a bunch of Switches, and I use them because I have them in different rooms and stuff, and other people use them and stuff like that. But like, I don't know, this just it sucks, and hopefully they do something. Maybe it looks like they can't fix it now, though. I know I've heard you guys' previous conversations. Like, if they could fix it, it might have already been something, but it seems like there's not anything to fix it yet. Like,
it's
bizarre.
I've managed to miss out on Joy-Con drift, like knock on wood, but none of my Joy-Cons have experienced drift, which is great. And it's nice that they're apologizing for it, but like what they need to do is fix it from the factory, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's got to be something that they can do to ensure that this stops happening.
So on that note, here's specifically what Nintendo President Shuntaro Furukawa said at the latest financial Q&A. He said, regarding the Joy-Con, we apologize for any trouble caused to our customers. We are continuing to aim to improve our products, but as the Joy-Con is the subject of a class action lawsuit in the United States, and this is still a pending issue, we would like to refrain from responding about any specific actions. Mm. So even if they were doing something specific to address the issue, it sounds like they can't talk about it.
Oh, weird. Yeah,
because of the class action.
That makes sense, right?
No, I mean the only way to really rectify this is
a lot of red tape around the legality of what they can and can't say on what they knew about the issue prior to these mm-hmm. claims coming up, and like what they're doing to rectify that issue. I'm sure there's like a ton of just an army of lawyers behind it.
Well, because I think like worst case scenario is that, you know, there's settlements that they pay out to everybody. And also they have to do like a global recall of every Joy-Con out there. That's a lot like that. And that's a lot of. Yeah, that's a lot of money too.
With the Wiimote, they sent free grips to everyone.
Yeah. I remember that. Yeah, I remember.
I don't know.
Because, do you remember it with
throw them
Mario Party?
Yeah, people kept throwing them into TVs.
Yeah.
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 Which is really funny. I never did that. Because it came with a little arm. It came with a little clamping thing. Yeah. So some people would be like, I don't care and play.
Well, there was like you couldn't like go to a Nintendo preview event or anything like that for the entire Wii era without the very kind demo people who were working there being like, oh, don't forget to put your wrist strap on. And I'd always be like, hey, it's we're friends here. I don't need to do this, right? And they're like, no, you have to do this. And I'd be like, I'm not going to throw. That's never happened to me. I'm not going to throw this through your TV. And they're just like, you have to. Like that's the Nintendo law here. And so like I physically cut the Joy-Con strap things off of, like I cut those things off on the mm-hmm. on the what do you call those things, the stupid sliders that
I don't know what to call them. What are those called? I know there's an official term for them, but
the
I don't
Joy-Con
know it is.
It's is it the straps?
I'm scared to even say what.
Everyone knows what we're talking about. We don't need to name it. We can be vague. It's fine.
It was this game kind of weird. I'm good.
Either way, I cut them off. I don't even want to deal with them. I've never really experienced Joy-Con drift either, except for one Joy-Con that I modded myself. And it's like, I walked right into that one. Yeah, it's my fault. So I can't even get mad about it.
You caused drift on your own Joy-Con. Yeah, what'd you do?
I modded in a D-pad for basically the SNES, the Amazon sells those shell mods. And I think if I open it up and mess with it again, I will. But I've just been too lazy and just been using.
I don't know if that would cause Joy-Con drift though. To be honest.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. It probably wouldn't, but I just like to blame you for things. I'm sorry.
That's fine. Fair. It's completely fair. That's I'm very used to it around here. So
back to the, you know, like not using the strap for the Wiimote. You know, you never think mm-hmm. you'd be one of those people until it happens. Like I was at a bowling alley, nothing to do with the Wii, but I was using an actual bowling ball to bowl. And it's like, I'd never be the person to just arbitrarily throw a bowling ball where it's not meant to go, but I totally did. So
what?
Oh yeah.
You never know what's going to happen. Well, I thought that was
like something that happens when you bowl. Like, is that not a common occurrence? Like,
no, that's why you stand back from people who are bowling. Because I was one of those people who was like, okay, I'm going to bowl. And I went back and then it flew off my hand behind me. Luckily, I did not injure anyone except for the floor. But this is why you wear straps with the Wii, because the Wii.
And
remote,
straps with the bowling ball.
Yes.
As you will.
Do you guys remember
did
you guys have a PSP?
Yeah.
Remember PSP? PSP came with that like sock.
Mm-hmm.
That was like open on one side, and I was showing it to a friend, and I was like, oh, you know, and it even comes with this thing which protects it, so like if it flies out and I like tilt my hand like that, and my PSP shot out and hit like an exposed pipe and just exploded, and I put it back in the box and I brought it to GameStop and I was like, I think I have one of those like cracked screens, like the dead pixel. The lady opened it up and she was like, yeah, you definitely have at least a dead pixel. Like it looks like a spiders live inside this thing, and they returned it on the spot. And I don't.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
You showed them.
Anybody I caused harm to in that scenario?
That's kind of fraudulent.
Yeah,
it's been fraudulent. Okay. Here's the thing, though. It's been like 14 years, so I can. That's a crime I can talk about.
Everyone.
Yeah, if a crime happened a decade ago. Yeah, if a crime happened a decade ago, you can admit it freely and get away with it. It's fine.
Yeah, especially if it's in a GameStop. Yeah.
GameStop, particularly GameStop.
And you get 7 years in a Best Buy and five in a Walmart. So just write it down, put it in your wallet, and then do some crime.
Yep.
Don't do crime. Don't listen
to
us. Don't
do crime. I'm just
joking. We'll talk about what Nintendo is doing about Joy-Con drift when they are allowed to say so. But otherwise, let's move on to the next topic. So another disappointing piece of news due to COVID-19. I said we were going to have this every week, and we mostly have. But a Nintendo theme park opening has been delayed indefinitely. As far as we all know, Universal Studios Japan was going to have a Super Mario themed area of the park, and it has been postponed due to the pandemic. The parks actually have opened to the public, but they are afraid that opening the new area of the park will incite so many more people to want to come that it would be dangerous. Yeah. So they're going to wait.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah, makes sense to me as well.
Yeah, it's 100%. I mean, obviously, you know, we all live in California, right? Mm-hmm. I think everybody here is in California. And yep. They reclosed the in Los Angeles areas. Now you got to close back up because there's a lot of issues. So it makes sense. They've got to delay this because there's going to be too many problems.
Yeah, it's such a bummer because it's like this is something. I mean, if you had shown us pictures of this when we were like five, we'd be freaking out. Like the fact that this is finally coming into fruition. I've been paying attention to all like the leaked, you know, sort of like aerial photos and stuff like that. Like this, it's so close to being done. It's like
it. And it looks insane. Like it looks crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm really interested to see what kind of merchandise they're selling there and like all that. Like I was saying this on food. Yeah. Well, that's the thing too. I don't know if you guys have been to like Tokyo Disney, but like that theme park is weird as hell. Like it's completely Tokyo Disney Sea is like, it's nothing like Disney World or Disneyland. Like they have completely different theme stuff. Like they have food items that they straight up don't have here. Like, and it's just like fun. It's fun as hell to just walk around and like get a bunch of stuff that's like completely different than what you have here.
Dude, I was completely right. 2020, that was, I got my portable computer. You know what I'm saying? I had everything ready to go. And then 2020, 2019, I traveled to Nigeria. You know, it was great. Mm-hmm. Had a good mm-hmm. time there. You know, was like, okay, cool. I got Sweden. I got, you know, Japan on the list for this year. And 2020 happened. And it just...
I'm sorry.
I was going to go and enjoy all the things, but I'm going to have to wait probably for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
Next year, maybe, hopefully. And in some other news, I just want to quickly go over this, but Nintendo has stopped European retailers from selling first-party digital game codes. And just to quickly summarize what that means, we're talking about it before the show, but basically you won't be able to go to like a GameStop or GameStop equivalent in Europe and buy a digital card, like gift card for a specific game. You can still buy eShop cards, but you can't then, you know, make someone get a certain game with it. That's it. So I guess
why?
It just says, Nintendo statement just says, after careful examination of the evolving European marketplace in recent years, Nintendo has decided to end the availability of download codes for its own published software via retailers effective July 1st, 2020. Customers will still be able to purchase Nintendo eShop funds, Nintendo Switch Online memberships, and add-on content such as the Pokemon Sword and Shield expansion pass at retailers across Europe. Download codes for Nintendo Switch software from other publishers will also still be available.
The answer to that is they want to retain 100% of the profits, and they know that you're dipping into the eShop to make that purchase regardless. And so rather than, I mean, like there's a lot of stuff that happens, sort of hoops that happen to jump through that happens at like GameStop where you can, you know, like stack deals on top of deals and stuff like that. That's I got my Xbox One X because they had some like insane trade-in for the old Xbox.
Yeah.
And like I felt like I robbed the place, like different than when I went in with the PSP. But
this is a recurring theme for you, this different crime.
But I think that like what kind of sucks about this is that for this, I think this impacts a lot of kids who don't have credit cards, because to make a purchase on the eShop, you basically either need a PayPal account, a credit card, or you need to add funds from an eShop card that you'll have to buy in the physical place or buy digitally online. And I think Nintendo just said, you know, we want to make all 60 of those dollars for when somebody buys Smash Brothers or Luigi's Mansion or something like that, rather than, you know, somebody trading in a bunch of stuff and then GameStop taking a cut. Because I'm not sure exactly how GameStop makes money off of selling cards like that. I imagine that those cards, they make money off of them because they are like, you bring in a bunch of stuff to buy, and maybe in the store you buy a Funko Pop or something else. It's one of those things where you end up purchasing other stuff because you're actually in there. But this is obviously like this, that is a significant part of GameStop's business model in 2020, or whatever business for anybody brick and mortar is in 2020. And so this has to be hitting them too. Like this, I think the bigger issue here is that this is like one of the biggest global video game chain is basically taking another blow to the belt here. And
I know we keep saying GameStop, and I just know we mean the equivalent of GameStop in Europe.
It
is just Game. I thought it was, and I was like, that sounds wrong to call a store just straight up Game, but
yeah,
that's
I know
what it is.
Like Sony did something similar. They removed PS4 games, so it seems like it's a monetary type of thing. Like, you know, they want to get that full cut, because I don't know if you guys have looked over like the sales reports and kind of what's going down with digital sales, but it's exploding. PSN is even crazy. Like, Sony makes so much money just off of PSN, and they just want more of it. That's pretty much what it comes down to. So I think, you know, Brian's right on when he said that, you know.
What irks me about that is that we don't get clarity on digital sales in the same way we do retail sales. And even retail sales are basically just like the top 10 or 12 retailers through MPD. And so like even stuff like I saw a lot of people being like, oh, The Last of Us sold 4 million units in a week and then it had an 80% drop the next week. And people who didn't like that game were celebrating it. But like that those numbers don't tell us anything about what is happening digitally. And in a year where you don't want to go to the store for anything, those numbers are more important than ever. And we don't have a transparent pipeline to find out exactly what those numbers are, unless those companies decide to give that information up themselves, which they only do if there's really good news. And so that kind of sucks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sony gave us the 4 million, which included digital. But then after that, we got like the big drop and people were trying to do that. And I was just like, okay, well, we don't know how it's doing digital. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
From past that. So I don't know. I mean, but yeah, there was a drop, but there's still the stay-at-home orders, you know, especially now, like, so to me, it's just like, whatever. I mean, but yeah, hopefully we get Nintendo's been a little bit, like with Animal Crossing, they did give us like digital numbers, but that was just with Animal Crossing. The game was doing extremely well.
Yeah.
You know, with other games, they haven't, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. I think it's really easy to release those numbers, digital and physical, or both, or one or the other, when those numbers are really high. You know what I mean? Like, it's a really easy thing to put out celebratory numbers. It's a more difficult thing to do to be like, well, we put this game out and it only sold like 800,000 units in its first week, and that's bad news. Like,
we didn't get like Death Stranding. I'm not going. I know.
Right.
But we didn't get Death Stranding. We didn't get Days Gone. We didn't get a lot. Like, you know, there's a lot of games that we didn't get out. Last of Us. Oh, here we go. Like, which is great, by the way. I bought it. I was part of that 4 million. You know.
Yeah. No. I've actually found like over the last decade the reporting on that or the inconsistency to like to be pretty frustrating, frankly, because it's like if you look at last generation, PlayStation during the PS3 era was basically saying shipped. They were constantly like, "Oh, we shipped this."
It's not the same thing.
Yeah, which is not the same thing as sold. And then the sort of like things kind of teetered in their favor a little bit, and they kind of leveled the playing field in the sort of the numbers versus Xbox 360. And they started saying sell through rates. And if you look at this generation, Microsoft hasn't given us anything. Right. Nobody like straight up knows how many consoles Microsoft has sold. And like that's kind of a bummer because people are just you can only piece together hearsay and speculation. And Nintendo, since they've been doing really well, has been really upfront about what's selling and what isn't. And in the meantime, like the closest thing you can do is just look in the eShop and look at the charts and be like, okay, this gives me an idea of what is performing best digitally. And so like when I saw the SpongeBob reviews coming in and they weren't that great, and then I opened up the eShop and it was like for like a week and a half straight, it was the number 2 or 3 game on there. I'm like, well, this is all telling a different story than just getting physical numbers once a month in our email, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I know talk more about sales numbers for eShop and stuff next week, but I did want to move on to games out this week.
Well, there is something that we need to touch on really quickly before we move on, Casey, and that's that Brian just told that story about trading in his Xbox One X. Or trading in his Xbox for an Xbox One X and committing a crime. And unfortunately, that defies the 10-year law that we talked about earlier. So the cops are on their way to Brian's house.
Actually, there is a loophole there because that GameStop in San Francisco no longer exists. And so neither does the crime.
You're off. You're off the hook.
There's no paper trail. The there can't be any crime.
Oh,
you're done.
Yeah, exactly. All the records are banished. They're gone.
That's true. Now,
Reggie might have them now. Maybe Reggie.
Oh man.
For some reason, Reggie has Brian's Xbox receipts.
Yes, absolutely. Reggie's got them. Dude. You're in trouble. Reginator's coming for me.
He's coming after all of you guys who committed fraud against GameStop, and I assume
he's retired. He's got time to do it. You know?
I'm not saying nothing. I don't. I'm good.
Do you guys okay? I don't want to get arrested, but if the guy pulls up is Reggie Fils-Aimé, I'm gonna be like, my man, all right, yeah. let's get in the squad car. This is great.
Let's talk about my crimes. Let's talk about games out this week that you may or may not buy at a GameStop, but you probably won't because you'll probably buy it digital because no one wants to go outside, including, and thank you, Tom Marks, for providing me this list. I appreciate it. So real quick, two of them. Yes, Your Grace comes out on the 26th for $20. Technically came out. Yeah, I know it's technically last week, but we didn't talk about it. And it is a fun kingdom ruling game where you are a king holding court as you make decisions for your kingdom. It's extremely popular on Steam. Thank you, Tom. And then also Biped out on the 2nd for $15, which is a fun little co-op action adventure game about adorable robots, and each stick controls one of the legs of your robot. And Ooh. So cute games. Thank you, Tom. Those are Tom recommendations. But I also wanted to ask OJ, and I know Zach, I know you mentioned this game before as well. The Legend of Heroes Trails of Cold Steel 3 out on the 30th for $60. So it's out now. It's the newest in a very well-loved turn-based JRPG series. And there's nearly 900 universally positive reviews on Steam where it launched in March. So I played the demo when it came out on the Switch a few months ago, and OJ, I know you did as well, and it prompted you to buy the collector's edition. And I'm under the impression that we had two different opinions about this game. So I want to have you go first.
Sure. No problem. The game I can, and by the way, I can understand like where some people might not like this style of game. It is it's pretty complex. There is a lot of stuff in the game. There's a lot of different characters that you can use. There's a lot of different options that you can have. There's a lot of variety that you can do with your characters in this. And I was never a fan of the series really beforehand. I had just seen it. You know, I just seen people talk about it and, you know, people discuss the game Falcom and some of the situations that Falcom had with Switch early on and fans getting mad that their games weren't on there. So that's when I decided to kind of research them a little bit more. And after playing the demo, I was like, wow, this has a lot of variety within the combat. Now, I played the Japanese demo, so I didn't even know what was going on. I had no idea what was going on, but I just played through it, and I had a lot of fun. I thought it was really cool, which prompted me to, as soon as they, you know, said that I can get it on Amazon, I picked it up and should be at my door at some point today or whenever, you know, Wednesday.
So here's the thing, OJ. I played it in English, and I still didn't know what was going on. Because, so I like more complicated RPG systems. I think it's cool. I like customizing. I like the strategy. I think the gameplay was really smart and interesting, but the demo drops you in, doesn't explain anything at all. Literally nothing. You can't even go into a manual to like read about the game systems in the demo. It just kind of like throws you in and then doesn't tell you anything about it. There's no tutorial. It doesn't even introduce you to who the characters are. So it made me think like, oh, like I need to play the second one to understand what is happening.
Really, it's just more based story-wise. That's kind of the thing. But yeah, it is a continuation. You know, there is a, for people that are interested in it, and obviously the first and second game aren't on Switch, there is like a story catch-up thing in the game. So when you boot it up, you will be able to know what happened. Almost like if you played like Mass Effect 3 on the Wii U, how they had that little thing to where you could pick some decisions and kind of see what happened in the first one. Obviously, it'd be better if you actually played it, but those games are crazy long. Like if you want to get into this, like you're really gonna go play one and two, like I mean, most people don't have the type of time to do that, but I understand. But I think maybe if they put like a full tutorial in there, it would have been like Xenoblade Chronicles but even like times three. So I think maybe that's what they were thinking by not putting that, because there's so many systems and mechanics, you just be going through text over and over and over.
You know, you're right. There's probably a better tutorial, like spread out over more time in the actual game, that they felt like was too much to put into a demo. So, but the gameplay did seem really cool. I don't like not knowing what I'm doing. Absolutely. So I guess this would be a game that I would go and watch some YouTube videos about before I really get into, so I like know how to strategize.
Yeah. Side note, everybody should, if you're listening to the show, should get a Japanese eShop account with a burner email and download demos, because they get a bunch of stuff there that you don't really see, sometimes never really come to America at all, if not, you know, months or years later. So, yeah, it's obviously a little cumbersome to go through some of the menus, but you'll figure it out.
Yeah, Persona 5, the Scramble game, that's on there.
Yeah,
that's great.
So those are the games out this week recommended by Tom and OJ. And I want to move on to games that we are actually currently playing this week. Zach, let's start with you. What are you playing this week?
Okay, so I know a lot of you are probably looking for a Xenoblade update for me. I haven't played Xenoblade in some weeks. I've fallen off really hard. I might go back to it. I think that game is cool. It's just not... The further that I got into it, I think the less and less engaged I got. And I think a lot of people, especially in the NVC group, kind of assumed that the curve would go the opposite direction. Like, the deeper that I got into it, the more I would like it. I think that battle system is amazing. I think it's the actual concept of the world is really cool. The story and the characters just aren't really doing it for me. So I may come back to it and finish it, because I think I could probably storm through the last like 10 to 15 hours. But as of right now, I'm just playing other stuff. Especially right now, I'm playing Mr. Driller Drill Land, which is freaking awesome. Brian, are you a Mr. Driller guy? I feel like you.
Oh yeah,
like
Mr. yeah.
Driller. Okay,
yeah. No, I love that game. Drill I love Land, that franchise.
Drill Land is the fifth game in the Mr. Driller franchise, and I don't believe that it came to the States. In fact, I know that it didn't. So it was only released in Japan on the GameCube, and Bandai Namco has brought a remastered edition of Drill Land to Switch on in the States. And man, that is a Mr. Driller game through and through. It is so fun, and I forgot how much I love that franchise. For those of you that don't know, it's a puzzle game. You know, you want to match colors, but the twist on this is that you're basically trying to escape from the blocks that are falling on top of you while gathering items and stuff in these mazes. And like, what a cool game. And this one especially has like a really awesome sort of Mary Blair, like mid-60s Disney art style that I think really, really works for the franchise. And this game kind of released sort of in secret. Like, yeah. There wasn't a lot of fanfare. There wasn't a lot of like pre-release to it. It was just like, oh, hey, this, you know, long lost Mr. Driller game is now available on Switch. And it's a little expensive. It's $30, $29.99, which is a bit much for an 18-year-old game. But if you're a Mr. Driller fan and you didn't have an opportunity to play this, it is so awesome. There are so many different game modes. It looks great, and the music like absolutely slaps. It's a very, very cool game.
And there's a demo available if you want to find out if you like it or not. Cool.
Yeah, I just remember playing Mr. Driller on the Dreamcast back in the day. Yeah. When my mom got me the Dreamcast, I was like, yo, look at this. Like, I thought it was
I got into it on the Dreamcast, and I played on the DS also. I think there was one that launched like pretty early on the DS that I got really into.
Yeah. Yeah. One of my favorite puzzle franchises. Partially inspired by like the amount of Picross that I was playing. It was just like, oh great, there's another puzzle game to play. And so yeah, Mr. Driller gets two thumbs up for me. Highest recommendations.
Cool. Thanks, Zach. Brian, what have you been playing?
More Clubhouse games. I'm like super hooked on that. Yeah. It's like I really, really dig it. It's become like a really sort of chill way to wind down after we just wrapped up this IGN Summer of Gaming thing, and it was a lot. And so to say the least, which is why we've been trying to get OJ in for like 6 weeks now, and here we are. We finally did it. Work.
Well, we kept saying after Summer of Gaming, and then Summer of Gaming just kept getting longer. So
yeah. Well, luckily the summer's over now, and so so is gaming. So I think we're done.
All summers are over now, actually.
Summer's canceled too.
Yeah, we're just right. Yeah, right.
I mean, it is right. Summer vacation is definitely canceled.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. It's canceled.
Yeah,
man, that's
super canceled.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Anyway, I like bowling and darts a lot in the clubhouse. Yeah, no, it's I find myself I'm one of those people that like when it comes to like food, I'll pretty much try anything. I don't care like where it's from, how weird it is. Like I love to travel. I love to eat different things. But when it comes to these like video game collections, I always just stick to my comfort foods. And this one, I think it does a pretty good job of getting you out of that and nudging you to play stuff that you don't know anything about. Like the idea of me sitting down on my Nintendo Switch and playing like digital card games has never been exciting for me, but the UI in this game and the sort of like tutorials for everything are like so fun and personal that it kind of encourages you to try a bunch of different stuff. But when you don't want to do that and you want to just like drink some beers and play some dumb games, like bowling is super fun and darts is super fun and golf and like a bunch of like table tennis. It's a bunch of like really fun little just sort of like the kind of things you would play at like a Dave and Buster's or something. And I don't know, I guess I miss going to arcades. In a normal year, I'd be shooting fast travel and
filming in a bunch of them, but that's not happening. So
I did want to ask you a question, Brian. When you're playing the bowling game in Clubhouse, do you ever accidentally throw the ball behind you?
I mean, who would do that? Like, seriously, who would do that?
Like, how do you even do that? How could you be so irresponsible?
I honestly have no idea.
Somebody's irresponsible, definitely irresponsible, and can't put together hosting stuff.
Oh,
like
yeah.
I don't know who would do that.
Sorry, Casey. Yeah, no, for sure. No, well, actually, I tried to, and a pop-up came up, and it said, no one would ever do that.
No one would do this.
And in fact, if they do, let us know, and then we'll make sure that they don't play video games ever again, because this is wildly irresponsible. While they were responsible,
too. They didn't tell you to take a break while you're at it.
It said take a break. It said you're a menace and a danger, and you need to leave.
So Brian and I both have cops come into our doors today.
That's right.
But they're both Reggie, so it's
that's fine. If it's Reggie, I'm okay with that. That's fine. We chat about our bowling misdeeds and GameStop frauds.
Oh, Reggie's definitely throwing a bowling ball or two behind by accident. I'll put that out there. We'll see what happens.
OJ, what have you been playing recently?
Yeah, I've been playing. I just want to say something real quick, Brian. Yeah. That you would eat anything. All right.
Yeah.
So me and you we're gonna take a trip to Nigeria. There's a lot of great food. But one time we rolled up, me and my aunt. We were in a car, and she rolled up and she ate a fried maggot that was like, you ever watch like Lion King, like when they open up like Hakuna Matata, mm-hmm. like it was like one of those. And I didn't want to touch it. So would you eat one of those?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Absolutely. In a heartbeat. If it had like some seasoning on it, you know, like that's.
Seasoned, but I didn't. That looked disgusting. So you'd eat that?
I would. If you fried a maggot in.
It was huge, too. It was like this.
Was it moving?
It was dead. No, it was fried.
Okay. I don't. I mean, it's like in
very lightly fried.
I ate a shrimp in a restaurant with Shuhei Yoshida in Japan that was like still wiggling, and like that I'll eat anything in Japan. I love seafood. That was weird. Like there's a thing in your brain that's like, what? No, this is not ready for you yet.
Okay.
But I would do it. I would do a fried maggot with a little bit of Old Bay, you know,
put
some habanero hot sauce on it. I'm good to go.
I'll just stick to the Nigerian rice and chicken. that was my dish there. So, but in terms of games, sorry to go. I had to try to ask him that question. Games, Smash Brothers.
No, I want to add on to that tangent real quick. I know I was making faces about those maggots, but I have eaten a scorpion that I caught myself. So I'm just going to put it out there.
Really? How did you know? How did you know it wasn't poisoned or whatever?
I don't know. We cut off its tail and we put it in a frying pan over a campfire.
Every so often,
you guys are crazy. So often, man. You guys are eating what, a scorpion?
Well, so
look, Brian looks mystified.
I want to stay removed
from that process.
One thing you got to understand, OJ, is like every so often Casey will say something so crazy like that, and then you have to remind yourself, oh, right, she's from Florida. That's just probably a normal Florida thing that happens.
I know she says some crazy things, but now that you say Florida, it's all just connecting.
So plot
recontextualizes twist, everything.
This was in South Carolina. During summer camp, where we were doing a survivor-like activity, where everyone had to catch their own food for the day.
But oh you're from Florida.
But I'm from Florida. Yeah.
No, he's right. You brought to Florida there.
Like, man,
you brought to Florida to survive.
Earthworms. Everyone else is eating. You know.
Did you guys read How to Eat Fried Worms when you were kids?
Yeah.
No. It's a. I love how disgusted you are.
I didn't read that. I read Taxi Dog, and I read like normal books for kids. books on worms.
It was a.
What about the hungry little caterpillar? It's like
not how to eat them, though. How to eat? No,
I have a 2-year-old, so I've read that Hungry Caterpillar book 1,000 times. I haven't memorized.
Oh yeah.
But no, How to Eat Fried Worms was a book about a kid who bets another kid
that he can't eat like a fried worm every single day for a month. And he does it, but there's like a bunch of days where like it's like almost midnight and he doesn't have time. He's like busy and doesn't have time to make a fried worm. So he just goes in his backyard and he gets just a raw wet worm and just eats it. And I remember just being so disgusted by that.
Yeah, that's awful.
It's a great book. Check it out.
That was my biggest inspiration and role model when I was a kid. I don't know what you're talking about, Brian.
Could it be me, man? Just I can't.
1 million better ways to get protein in your body than to eat a weird wet worm.
Not on the Florida Survivor Challenge in North Carolina.
Gosh, like, scorpions aren't even insects. That's fine. But OJ,
what are they?
They're arachnids. Yeah, they're
spiders. Agree to disagree, I guess.
They're spider friends.
Science. I mean, that's just science, dog. Like, you can disagree all you want, but that's facts.
Like our own rules.
I mean, you know what? We will talk to Blathers about this at the museum, and he'll sort it out. And he's the guy I trust over any of you because he has a degree in that.
You're right. Let's go trust Blathers. And back on the video game note, as OJ tried to do, and then I so terribly derailed it again. OJ, what games are you playing this week?
You're good, Casey. You're cool. Games, yeah, just Smash Brothers, Min. That's been what I've been playing a lot. I've been playing a lot of Xenoblade 2. Huge, huge, huge Xenoblade fan. So, yeah, I've been playing a lot of that. Just getting towards the last part, it just keeps going. There's a lot of side quests. The side quests just keep
you're playing,
going.
So you're playing the second one or the first one?
Definitive Edition.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, Xenoblade Chronicles Definitive Edition. I played the second one to death and back. Played Torna. Love it. I love all the games. I have them all. Been playing them a very long time. So yeah, Xenoblade's great. So much fun. I know necessarily you weren't the biggest on it, but I love the first one. It's my favorite one out of all of them. And then followed by Torna. I play Torna pretty much every year. I play at least one. So I absolutely love Torna. It's a really good game. But yeah, Xenoblade Chronicles Definitive Edition, played that. Played a lot of Smash Brothers. And that's pretty much it. Yeah, Smash Brothers and Xenoblade. That's what I've been playing.
Nice.
Good fun.
Thanks, guys. So that's what everyone is playing this week. So let's move on to some very awesome questions from our audience in the question block section. Our first question comes from Alan Boone, and they ask, are games too long? Does Nintendo do a good job of keeping just the right length, or have they drifted into the too long territory with games like Breath of the Wild and Fire Emblem Three Houses?
Ooh.
Interesting, because Breath of the Wild can be as short as you want it to be.
That's what I would think too. And the same thing about Fire Emblem Three Houses. I mean, you don't have to spend all of that time talking to people like I did.
Yeah.
You can finish a lot faster if you wanted to.
But it's still a very long game, though.
Yeah, even if it is.
Yeah, but I mean, it just depends, right? I mean, I think some people think that some games are a little bit too long when it comes down to, like, Luigi's Mansion. Some people even felt that maybe that was a little bit, like, they were surprised with how long.
That's so funny that you brought that one up, because I was going to use that as an example of like the perfect length of game. Like I think like the way that game is structured is like so beautifully paced. Like I think that Luigi's Mansion is like the perfect length for that type of game.
How long did it take you? Because it took me like 20 something hours to beat it.
Yeah, I think just over 20 hours to finish it. Yeah.
I feel like that's a little too long for like a game like that. But on the flip side, the GameCube version of Luigi's Mansion is like 4 hours long, which is way too short. And so, I think it's good to find a sweet spot. I mean, we talked about The Last of Us a little bit. That game is definitely too long. Like I totally agree on that, and I really really liked it. But I don't really think a narrative story driven game like that that is sort of contained needs to be 25-30 hours. I think
that it's totally dependent on how compelling you find what you're doing in the game, right? Like it's game length is such a subjective thing, because some people want a game to be long to feel like they've justified spending their $60, $40, whatever they've spent on a game. Some people think that a game is too long because, like, when we were talking about The Last of Us, like I was saying, like, there's just too many encounters. Like, I loved all the story stuff, but the number of encounters was just too many, and I feel like it would be a stronger game if they cut some of those stealth parts, right? Like, I think it's totally, like, the length of a game. You can't just, I mean, some people can just get out there and be like, video games are too long. We've all seen what happens there. But
there's just too many button inputs.
It's just, yeah, exactly. It's just, I think it's a totally subjective question. Like it's all dependent on how you feel about a game. Like I could I think the first time that I played Breath of the Wild, it took me about 120 hours to finish it. But I was doing everything that I could possibly do because I just love that game so much. I didn't want it to end.
You know? I was the same way. And I was actually like actively pushing back from finishing it because I didn't want that part of it to end. I wanted an excuse to keep going back in there. And I know like I had been told like, you know, it saves right up until the final encounter, blah, 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 blah. But still, like my brain was like, don't, like, there's so much in this world to see before you kind of, you know, close this book for a little while. But yeah, I think like you guys are totally right. Like I've always said, like video games are interesting because they're the only medium where people essentially conflate length with value. And that's not something you see really for books or movies or TV shows. Like no one really says this is the great book because it's really long, or like, you know, like this like Avengers Endgame should be more money than Trolls 3 because, you know, it's 3 hours or whatever. Like it's video games are, inherently much more expensive. It's like, usually $60 to get in.
They're inherently more expensive, but I think the value that video games bring you as far as hours of entertainment is always better compared to the value of like a movie. Because like you go see a movie, it's $15-$20 for a ticket and you get an hour and a half of entertainment versus you spend $60 and you can get upwards of 100.
Yeah, how much they cost these days?
In San Francisco, I know. Kill me.
I haven't went to the movie theaters. Yeah, I mean, I haven't went to the time, so man,
that's the thing about seeing a movie in San Francisco. If you pay, you know, $17, $20 for a ticket, like I wouldn't be opposed to that movie being like 6 hours long. That's an expensive film. Like,
The thing is about really long games is they keep me from replaying them. And that's kind of a bummer. Like there are games like it's one of the reasons I replay Resident Evil 4 so often is because I can crush through that game in like 10, 12 hours. And that's something I can do annually. Whereas I look at something like Super Mario Odyssey, which I really liked, but it felt like a little long. And I feel like if I want to play a game like that, I'll just play Mario 64 again. Cause I can, you know, kind of hit 70 stars and dip out. Whereas Odyssey just felt a little bit bigger, a little more spread out.
Well, I think that like with games like Breath of the Wild too, you know, I spent 120 hours playing that game from start to finish the first time, but I've played that game 5 or 6 times all the way through. And like, sometimes it takes me 20 hours. Sometimes it takes me 60 hours because the player agency that it gives you to complete that game in however way you want is like, obviously such a defining factor of like what makes that game work in that scalability. Whereas some open world games like The Witcher 3, like you can't beat The Witcher 3 without spending at least 40 hours. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like that game as an open world game, there are still a lot of things like you can't just run to the end of that game and be like, okay, now I'm going to beat it today. You know, like, so I think like, that's also something to take into consideration.
I appreciate games constructed like Breath of the Wild, and I think Skyrim is kind of similar. There's almost an unlimited amount of things to do, but you could finish the actual story fairly quickly if you really wanted to. I just know that no one did. I put well over 100 hours in Skyrim, for example, but I don't think I ever actually finished the story. I just went around and did other random stuff.
Skyrim also does an interesting thing where like there are so many different paths that you can take outside of the main story. Like I've played Skyrim and just done like, oh, I've never done the mage school quest. I'm just going to go do that quest. And that's like a 10 hour quest line. And like, that's, you know, a totally encompassed thing where it's just like, okay, I played this. I'm done with this game for another 2 years. And when I come back, I'll do the Thieves Guild or something, you know?
Right.
I think that's interesting as well.
So in summary, game length is subjective. We don't necessarily think that Nintendo has gotten into the too long territory. I think Nintendo generally has a pretty good balance and none of their games seem especially bloated. So I appreciate Nintendo for that.
Brian definitely thinks every Fire Emblem is too long.
Yeah.
Well, that's an opinion.
It could all be 0 minutes.
Brian, you just gotta get on those tea parties. You have a daughter now. Do tea parties. Come on.
I will do pizza parties before I do tea parties.
I know you already did that. It's fine.
Pizza parties are great. I like pizza.
Can we have a pizza party when we go back into the office?
Yes, yes, please. Please.
Cool.
Yes, please.
Okay, we'll fly you up. I miss people, man.
I'll drive. I'm not too far.
miss people so much.
Yeah,
we'll spend that IGN money, get you on a, well, actually you're probably safe for driving in 2020.
Hey, look, yeah. Man, I that's the second bucket list thing, is to actually be in the IGN office. You know, this is great.
We'll get you there for sure.
If we're ever allowed to go back, you can definitely come by.
Yeah, actually one of my bucket list items this year is to be in the IGN office. We'll see.
With that, that is about all of the time left we have for Nintendo Voice Chat, IGN's Nintendo show. But before we log off entirely, OJ, where can everyone find you online?
Yeah, you can find me right on YouTube, Player Essence. I do streaming. I do Nintendo content, do Japanese RPG content, stream all the time, answer a bunch of questions, have a lot of cool interactions. Sometimes it's outside of games, too. We have a lot of fun. And I want to say thanks again for having me. Thank you guys so much for having me on.
Thanks so much for being on.
Yeah, thank you, man. Yeah.
Go hop
in OJ's chat when he streams. I popped in there the other day and surprised him, but go show him some love. He's working his ass off over there.
It's fun.
Thanks, guys. And remember, NVC comes out every Thursday at 3 p.m. Pacific time on your favorite podcasting platform or youtube.com or IGN.com. And remember, NVC is the only place you can.
OJ?
Get the thing.
I didn't know you were going to go to me.
Hello, friends. This is Mark Nell, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. Wait, the excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to season one, we are thrilled to announce the launch of season two. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you, and let's make season two even more memorable together.